Hi, welcome back, everyone. So now I would like to introduce Eliza Hull, who was the 2018 scholarship winner of the ABC Regional Storytelling Grant, which I must also remind you, the grant is actually open again for application. So if you are inspired by Eliza's amazing story today, I encourage you to apply. So Eliza worked with the ABC staff in Bendigo for 6 months to develop stories about parents with disability. Through this, she developed a series of podcasts called We've Got This, Parenting with Disabilities. So please welcome Eliza.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Melissa. And thank you for having me. I'm very excited to be here. It's a real honour. So my name is Eliza Hull, and I have a physical disability, which is known as Charcot-Marie tooth, and it has nothing to do with my teeth. It's a disorder that was named after the three founding French doctors. So it was Mr. Marie, Mr. Tooth, and Mr. Charcot. So it affects my nervous system and the communication between my brain and my limbs. See, whilst I have been disabled since I was 5 years old, I actually haven't identified as having a disability until actually quite recently in the last couple of years. If I'm completely honest, for me, disability was something that I was afraid of. The word, I don't know, the association, and I guess the assumptions. I realised that I had a lot of internal ableism going on. So 5 years ago, I was pregnant with my daughter, and like most parents-to-be, I was both excited and nervous at once. Although, as a person with a physical disability, there were added complexities in the mix. So internally, I was battling questions that were fraught with fear. I had questions like, would I be able to be a parent with a disability? Would the pregnancy be too hard for me? Would people judge me? Could I manage? What if my daughter inherited my disability? Because there is a 50% chance. So I guess at times my head was a whirlwind of anxiety. And I remember being given a huge pile of parenting books by a friend. There was all of the names, what to expect when you're expecting, baby wise, baby love, all of the titles that, you know, most parents get. But I realized that there were no mums like me in these books. I realised that I wasn't represented, and in fact, there were no parents with disabilities represented in these books. When I turned on the TV again, there were no parents with disabilities. I couldn't even think of any movie that represented disabled parents. And yet, in Australia, there's roughly 18% of our households that has a parent with a disability. So I wondered, where were we? Where are we? My theory is that parents with disabilities are not represented in the media because there's still a societal view that people with disabilities shouldn't be parents. If we have needs of our own and require others to look after us, then how could we possibly look after another? There's this idea that we can't parent and therefore potentially shouldn't. In the end, becoming a mother enabled me to not only face my own internal fears and ableism, but also understand where these discriminatory beliefs had come from. I'm now a proud disabled woman. I'm a proud disabled parent. I accept who I am and love that I can offer my daughter a life where diversity in all of its forms is celebrated. I came to realise that for so long I had been fed a lie. I'd been conditioned to believe that disability meant that you were somehow less. And through continual lack of underrepresentation of disabled people and disabled parents, I'd felt alone in my decision to parent. I remember going and seeing my neurologist and telling him that I was going to have a child, and it was very heartbreaking because he just shook his head and that said a million words. He also believed that, the pregnancy would be too hard, and yes, I did fall over being pregnant out on the road, but I got up, luckily, because it was, something that I felt like it was strong enough that I wanted to do it, and so I did do it, and it was okay. After searching far and wide, I finally found an overseas TV show that shared the stories of people with disabilities. But the person narrating the story didn't have a disability. So this meant that it was inaccurate, it was sensationalized, and it reinforced stereotypes that I had been taught all my life. The main argument within the show was that people with disabilities would find it far too challenging to be a parent. And subtly, they were stating that parents, therefore, shouldn't become parents and shouldn't have children. I realised after watching the show that these beliefs were everywhere and they'd been reinforced throughout my life. Looking at portrayals in fairy tales through the centuries, people with disabilities are often not seen as having the ability to be responsible for other people. So I decided to start a project that set out to change this. I wanted to represent parents with disabilities in a way that accurately represented their lives. I didn't want to sensationalize it or make it inspirational or brave. I wanted to normalize it because people with disabilities are parenting. They're in relationships. They have desires, dreams, hopes, needs, and not only are they having children, they are successfully creating families that are thriving. This project idea was brewing away in my head days and nights, actually sleepless nights, that I couldn't stop thinking about this project. I started researching disabled parents. Instagram became my new friend, hashtag disabled parents, and I just was constantly searching and finding new parents. I even decided to start going out and doing interviews with parents. Luckily, at that moment, I saw that the ABC was offering the chance to develop a project. So I applied for the Regional Storyteller Scholarship, and I was the recipient for 2018, which is a scholarship for a person with a disability living in a regional or rural location in Australia. Right now, they're offering two more scholarships for this year, and they've been offered funding, I think, for at least the next 3 years for two people each year to be a scholarship recipient. No, that's right. Sorry, I'm just wondering whether I've got the right slide up. Yes. I'm right. So during my time at the ABC, I was funded to travel around Australia interviewing a varied range of parents with disabilities, which eventuated into an 8-part audio series with Radio National Life Matters and feature articles and videos for ABC Life. The reaction has been overwhelming, with promotional interviews happening on the BBC in the UK, Channel 9's The Today Show, The 7:30 Report, ABC News Breakfast, and I think this comes down to the fact that people are ready for these stories, and I'm really proud that we've begun a wider conversation about what it means to be a parent with a disability in Australia. I believe that disabled people need to be given the chance to tell their own stories. We need more representation of disabled parents in the media in order to break down societal misconceptions. That's Deborah, who's a mother with dwarfism, and yeah, me on the Today Show. And I have to tell you, I was absolutely so nervous that I actually felt like I had an out-of-body experience when I was sitting on that couch. I was that nervous. But when I look back, I actually realised I did okay. So, some of society's misconceptions about parenting with a disability I found through these interviews with parents with disabilities include the belief that people with disabilities cannot be competent parents, that our children will be looking after us, that it's rarely in the best interest of a child to be raised by parents with an intellectual disability, which eventuates in the removal of children. So that's a misconception that some of society believes. That disabled people can't parent and therefore shouldn't parent, that because we have complex needs of our own, how can we provide care for another? Or that it will be too challenging to parent, or that a child will miss out. All of these misconceptions meant that I found the most common barriers that each parent faced happen out within the community. They came from assumptions from strangers that our children will be looking after us, or that disability is inherently negative or horrible. For instance, Emma Bennison, who I interviewed for the series, is based in Hobart, and her partner Vaughan are both blind. And Emma told me a story about her taking her three-year-old out into a shop, and the shop assistant said to her, "It's so lovely that you've got your little boy to look after you." And just about 10 minutes ago, her little boy had thrown the biggest tantrum, as three-year-olds do. And as she stated, in what universe would a three-year-old be looking after me? So day-to-day life parenting as a person who is blind was very unlike any other family for Emma. The challenges happened when her and her family stepped out within the community. It was the discrimination, the assumptions, and the misconceptions that she faced daily that she could not get used to. In fact, for Emma, the actual parenting within the home was a lot easier than she had imagined. Do you know how I play that? Yep. Oh, sorry, no, it's up to Emma Bennison, that slide. The PowerPoint slide. No, the slide on the PowerPoint. Sorry, just on the PowerPoint. Yeah, and then I just have to push. Yeah.
The actual kind of mechanics of looking after a baby as a blind person were very straightforward. Like, none of the things I thought were going to be difficult actually were. Like, I had this sort of obsession that I thought bathing might be difficult. Well, it really wasn't, because you do most of that stuff by touch anyway. Everybody I'd spoken to just about seemed to think that changing nappies as a blind person would be incredibly difficult. But again, you know, you do most of it by touch. I know lots of sighted parents who change nappies in the dark and do it completely by touch.
So that's Emma Bennison there talking. Other barriers that disabled parents face are the systematic barriers for parents with intellectual disabilities through child protection. I interviewed a mother with an intellectual disability, Amanda White, who constantly lived in fear that her two twin daughters would be taken away from her. She felt that she was always being judged. It was never based on how Amanda was doing at that given time. It was always this preemptive, constant fear that child protection instilled in her, that at any given day Amanda could lose her children. Amanda did have the support of her godmother, who was there if Amanda needed any sort of help. So this included if, say, Amanda needed some respite on the weekends, as any parent would need with twin baby girls. That would be hard work. Gonna hear that now.
I think the girls know that I've got a mild to moderate intellectual disability. It's more in learning than it is in parenting.
It's true.
Parents with intellectual disabilities can be parents. I've looked after my kids since they were babies till they're 14 years old.
What do you feel for the parents that do have intellectual disabilities and they lose their children? What do you feel for them?
That they should be given a fair go and give, you know, a chance to live their life with their kids and not be judged.
So that was Amanda White speaking there. Amanda now has two teenage girls who are excelling at school and their family is thriving. I shared dinner with them one night and absolutely fell in love with the girls. They're beautiful. But for one other mother who I interviewed, Susan Arthur, who's here today, this story wasn't the case. Unfortunately, Susan lost her child, and the child's paternal grandma is looking after her daughter. So this obviously has caused a huge amount of heartache for Susan, and she believes this could have been avoided if she had been given the support and the education to keep her child. For me personally, I believe that this is a real problem. When we're taking children away because of disability, it's doing great harm to children and to parents and to the social fabric of the Australian community. Parents with disabilities should have the same right as any other parent. They should be provided support and education to keep their children. Of course, there are some exceptions where it's not safe for children to stay with their parents. But when the decision is based purely on disability, where the parent hasn't been offered an adequate amount of support to keep their child, like Susan, I feel it is a true injustice. Other parents with intellectual disabilities are not even given a chance. There are children that are being taken straight away in hospitals, and they're also being given documents that they are presented with to sign that their children's being removed without it being clear, and the people with intellectual disabilities don't understand what they're signing. I feel this is by far one of the biggest barriers for parents with disabilities in Australia. Another mother that I interviewed, Jen Blythe, who is a single mother and who is deaf, faced discrimination through her child's school. She asked the school to send her a text or an email instead of phoning her, but instead they just kept ringing her ex-husband because they found communicating with Jen just too hard. She also had to spend weeks advocating for an interpreter to be at her birth. The hospital said that they could provide one when she was at the pushing stage, but not before. Yeah. Jen advocated for herself for many weeks when she was tired and heavily pregnant. Luckily, her persistence did work, but I feel this is not something that you should need to fight for, and this only happened 4 years ago. It seems the medical system has a long way to go. For queer parent Jax Jackie Brown, who I interviewed as part of the series, this was her experience.
That's okay.
We had to enter the IVF industry, which is full on. That was really hard as a disabled person to enter a medical industry again when I've had a lot of my childhood feeling really disempowered by the medical profession, to then give over my body to a medical space where disability was presumed to be an inherently negative, terrible thing. We used my eggs in Anne's womb, so we did reciprocal IVF. And I remember we went around to one of the nurses and sat down, and she talked us through, you know, some of the costs that would be involved and what they could offer. And she said, for an extra fee, we can do genetic testing on you and any embryos. And I said, oh, no, actually, we've decided personally that we want to opt out of that. We're just going to accept whatever child we might be lucky enough to have. And she leaned across the table, put her hand on Anne's hand, looked her in the eye and said, you know, this is your choice, though. As though I wasn't even there in that moment.
That's Jax Jackie Brown. Each disabled parent that I interviewed had ways that they adapted their lives. For instance, two parents, Emma and Vaughan Bennison, who were both blind, put bells on their children's shoes so they could hear them when they were walking around the house. Or single mother Jen Blythe, who is deaf, used a baby cry alarm which alerted her in the night with a flashing light, which she said was constantly a rude shock every night. She said she didn't get used to that. Or Carly Myers, a mother with dwarfism, cut the change table's legs so that it was the right height for her. Every parent has their unique way of adapting their lives. Another mother that I interviewed for the series was Mandy McCracken, who is based in Kilmore, and she's an example of why representation is so vital. Mandy McCracken had a blood infection 5 years ago that ended up giving her sepsis. To save her life, she had both of her hands and feet amputated. And through acquiring a disability later in life, Mandy has found her role as a mother has shifted. But what she's learned is that representation is vital in teaching children about disability. And this is a video of Mandy.
Probably the most interesting and probably most difficult part of being a parent with a new disability, probably also with an existing disability, is how your kids deal with it in the playground. So one day I had my youngest Tess came home and somebody said, your mum's a pirate or a robot because of my robotic hands. And she just burst into tears. And I said to her, well, I am. I've got robotic hands and I've got pirate legs. So, you know, we turned around and we made a joke of it. And I said, well, you know, no other kid in the classroom is going to have a half pirate, half robot mum. So, hey, you're ahead of the game there. So I think the key is to give your kids the chance to share the emotion that they're feeling with you, but then work out the solution together. For me, I confronted it really head on. I actually went straight into the classroom and I said to the teacher, right, we're going to do show and tell. I'm coming around tomorrow and I want to sit in front of all the kids in grade three and they can ask me any question. And so we sat down with the kids and my daughter Tess pulled my arms off. We passed around, I had legs that she passed around the room and all the kids could ask any question that they wanted. And all of a sudden I went from being the scary mum to Mandy that has some fantastic party tricks. Like, the kids love it. So rip the band-aid off and just have that hard conversation and open yourself up to letting people ask those questions.
Okay, so that's Mandy McCracken. So Mandy, as she said then, became a person again and not someone the kids should fear. Through these open and honest conversations and by letting the school children pass around her prosthetic arms and legs, they get to understand what it truly means to be a parent with a disability. I'd also like to share the experience of disabled woman Chanel McKenna, who's based in Brisbane, and I interviewed her as part of the series. When Chanel was 11 years old, she loved reading and listening to top 40 pop music. Since she was a baby, she has had cerebral palsy. When she grew up, she wanted to be a solicitor. She enjoyed school and had always been very academic. But suddenly and dramatically, her life was forever affected. Her mother agreed in unison with medical professionals and school staff that she should be involuntarily sterilised. She was taken without her consent to a hospital and a forced hysterectomy was performed. Chanel was only 11 years old and her choice to parent was forever stolen. Chanel emerged from the operation confused, scared and in severe pain. She had no idea why she was unexpectedly in hospital and it would take weeks before she could sit properly. The enormity of this has caused Chanel lifelong emotional pain and physical trauma. Chanel is now 46 and is studying a health science bachelor degree. Chanel should have been able to be a mother if she wanted to be. How is it possible that her choice was stolen from her as a child? And how are we as an Australian nation still allowing the forced sterilisation of children? Executive Director of Women with Disabilities Australia, Caroline Frommatter, I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right as well, has had over 20 years of experience advocating for women and girls with disabilities. She states that the practices of forced sterilisation of women and girls with disability continue to occur in Australia, and these practices remain legal and sanctioned by Australian governments. When I asked her why, she states that it's the supposed burden of care that menstrual and contraceptive management places on families and carers, and the widely held societal attitudes that disabled women cannot be effective parents. Women with disabilities are typically seen as childlike or asexual or oversexed, dependent, incompetent, passive, and genderless, and therefore considered inadequate for the nurturing reproductive roles considered appropriate for women. That's what Caroline stated. As Caroline states, for more than 15 years, the United Nations treaty monitoring bodies have categorically confirmed that forced sterilisation of children is a clear breach of some of the most fundamental human rights. However, women and girls with disabilities in Australia have failed to be afforded these provisions in international human rights law. Instead, they remain subject to widespread discrimination, systematic prejudice, and ableist attitudes that devalue and limit their rights. I'd like to hear Chanel.
When I woke up, I was in excruciating pain, and I didn't understand what was going on with my body. It would take weeks before I could properly sit in my wheelchair again.
The doctor was supposed to put dissolvable stitches in me, however, he didn't.
When the nurse removed the stitches after 2 weeks, I felt like I was in a river full of piranhas biting at my skin just for the fun of it.
I couldn't understand what was going on and why did I have to...
Why did I have to have this operation?
Throughout that piece...
When I woke up...
Oh, sorry. Throughout that episode, we had an actress voice, Chanel, and we also used her natural voice, and she uses a voice speech device, so we used all of those three. Chanel McKenna shouldn't have been denied the right to parent, that's my belief. I feel that disability is not a burden or something that needs to be fixed, and she's a human being, so I feel like her desire to be a mother should have, you know, that should have been lived, and it will never fade for her. Her right to have a baby should have been undeniable. I felt it was important to include Chanel's story within the series because of disability, her right to parent was stolen. Her story ended up being the most read article of the whole series. Would you care if we go back to the PowerPoint? Yep. Great, thank you so much, Melissa. So I just wanted to share the impact that I feel this series has made. I believe that this series is being used to change the barriers that disabled parents face. Women with Disabilities Victoria are now using the series to inform their sexual reproductive health in workplace development. Organisations are using it to educate their staff. Disabled parents are now sending the series to their mother's group so that it can do the explaining for them, which I absolutely love. And the most important step is changing people's perceptions. I'll never forget the first email that I got just from the general public through my personal website when someone had listened to the second episode with Susan Arthur and Amanda White, and someone said, you've changed my mind. I now have a different belief. And that reiterated to me the importance of sharing these stories. And I feel really grateful and honoured that these people did share their stories with the general public. So I owe it all to them. The series is representing people with disabilities and hopefully making them feel less alone in their decision to be a parent. I'd just like to end on the video, going back and forth, and then I'll come back to me.
I have a disability known as Charcot-Marie tooth, which is a neurological condition. It's a physical disability, and it's affected by my nervous system not sending the messages to my brain. When you have the complexity of being a parent with a disability, it can make it harder. But I truly believe that one of the hardest things is not home life and not being a parent with a disability in the home. It's actually what happens outside the home. I had an idea that I wanted to tell the stories of parents with disabilities, and this year I was the recipient of a regional scholarship with the ABC, which has enabled me to travel around Australia to tell these stories.
In all of the stacks of parenting books, there were no mums like me. That's what I've set out to change in this series.
I went to Hobart to interview Emma and Vaughan Bennison, who are parents that are blind. They have 2 children that are sighted. They spoke about when the 2 children were toddlers and how they added bells to their shoes so that they knew where they were.
The concerns people used to level at us was, oh, you know, how are you going to make sure that the baby's clean? How are you going to make sure that their nappy's changed appropriately, etc. And, you know, that's just very easy to do by feel. So, that it quickly became clear to me that that wasn't an issue.
So one of the things that I was particularly focused on was how we were going to find ways and places of changing babies when we're out and about in public, because I certainly didn't want people to be staring at us and judging us and what have you, but I also wanted to make sure that my baby was appropriately taken care of.
There are times that teachers have assumed that they need to read to our kids because we won't be able to, and it's not until I've pulled out the Braille book with the pictures or whatever it is that they've gone, oh, okay, so that's not an issue. So it's just lack of exposure, really, and ignorance born of fear that I think we are up against.
No, you're not.
Yeah, sorry.
What
he's thinking.
8, 9. 9. Jesus. I met Carol Taylor, who lives in Queensland. I felt really honoured when I went into her house because she's such an open and warm and friendly person.
Thank you so much for having me. Oh, you're very welcome. It's a pleasure.
Robert and I were newlyweds, and we had just returned from a weekend away at the Blue Mountains. And on the way home, early in the morning, we hit black ice. And the car rolled, and on the second roll, the roof caved in and hit me on the back of the neck and instantly severed my spinal cord. And it left me a quadriplegic, paralysed from the chest down and with paralysed hands. And in that split second, my life was forever changed.
She desperately wanted to have children, and after 15 IVF attempts, her and her husband ended up deciding to give up on the idea of having children, and then naturally they fell pregnant with their son.
I had another nurse on another occasion when I was having some blood taken more or less suggest to me that it was a little bit selfish of me to have, you know, to pursue this, and to, isn't it hard on him, and isn't it hard on your husband? Almost make me feel a little bit guilty. And in those early years, I wasn't strong enough to stand up and say what I'd say now.
Even though most people wouldn't think that she'd be able to play with me, being in a wheelchair, she used her tray as like an area for me to play with my toys when I was really little. I've never really known any other life without a disabled mum, but I find it completely normal, and I know how to deal with things when my mum's up, has something wrong, so I just find it completely normal.
For a very long time, I was confused as to what to call this series. I had lots of ideas, but funnily enough, I asked Vaughan, you know, what he would say to people that may potentially question his ability to parent. And he straight off the bat said that we've got this. And it really hit home. It resonated with me. It felt like it was the whole journey of what the whole series was about, that in fact, we have totally got this. Can you hear me, John?
Hey, Eliza. Well, if you're ready, we could start recording.
Okay, great.
I just realised how Australian I sound in that, with straight off the bat. yeah. So, I wanted to finish by saying that I believe that we as parents with disabilities are successfully parenting, and representing this in part is breaking down societal barriers and misconceptions. Through more representation of people with disabilities, I feel we as a community are breaking down some of these stereotypes and beliefs. Now more than ever, there is talk about diversity, about sharing our stories, varied as they are. And representation, I believe, is vital in creating an inclusive society. Making this series, I learnt that through having a disability, parents give a beautiful and unique experience to their children. They grow up in a home where difference is embraced, not feared. So what would I like for the future? I'd like more representation of parents with disabilities on our TV screens, on our radio, in our movies. More conversations. I feel like the more we talk about our experiences, the better. Representation is vital in creating this society. I want us to be visible. I want disabled young people to see disabled parents on stage and on their TVs and think, if I want that, I can do that. Disability isn't a burden. It's not something that needs to be fixed. It's what makes this world so wonderful. I feel that we are diverse and that's where the beauty does lie. So to any person with a disability about to dive into the unknown world of parenting, I hope that this series will, I guess, guide you in knowing that, like these parents with disabilities, that we have got this. I'd also like to state that, you know, to be completely honest, I was a little bit afraid of creating this series because I do know that it excludes some people with disabilities. That was a definite fear for me. So I just want to state that I do know that, and I see those people and feel that. So yeah, that's me. Thank you so much for listening. Also, I'd like to say if you are do have a disability and are regionally or rurally located, the scholarship is open for anybody that has an idea, any sort of idea that they want to create for that with the ABC. So please do apply.
Congratulations, Eliza. That's an amazing series. I think it's fantastic. And like you said, when you got that email to say the person had changed their mind about what they'd previously believed, that's what it's all about, isn't it? It's about changing people's mind, changing people's attitude. So really well done. Congratulations.
Thanks so much.
So does anyone have any comments or questions for Eliza?
Hi, me and my husband here, we've got two teenage boys, and we're very proud of them, and it wasn't easy, but it's, you know, like we had them as kids, but they managed to, you know.
Both have disabilities.
Yeah, I mean, because we've both got disabilities, and they, you know, they've seemed to adapt, and but it's just mainly was when, like, because we don't have a car. It was the main problem because we couldn't take him out anywhere, and and that was the most frustrating thing, like other normal families, you know, like being out of public was being out. Yeah, it was hard. Yeah, but now they're grown up, and yeah, and one's working at McDonald's, and one's doing a
community services
degree in Swinburne. So yeah.
Great.
Yeah, so it's different.
Do you mind if I connect with you after and have a chat? Is that okay?
Yeah,
that'd be great.
Yep. Thank
cool.
You.
Thank you.
Questions or comments? Thank you very much, Eliza. Oh, you've got one?
Sorry,
I didn't see you. Maybe I'm talking a bit too much today, and you might be sick of my comments. But anyway, I'm a father of three children, and my wife is also deaf, so the both of us are profoundly deaf. And my experience was also that my parents are deaf. So I'm a child of deaf parents, and I'm also a person who is deaf, and I have three children that are hearing or can hear. So they've had that experience of their grandparents and their parents all being deaf. But one person you spoke about, the problem not being within the home, it's actually being outside of the home that is the issue. Everything at home is fine. You've got everything in place. But when you walk out into the community, that's where you feel that pressure of trying to be this is how we felt as deaf parents. We had to try and gain that perception that we were doing better than those counterparts around us who could hear. And people would always judge us on maybe our children were being quite cheeky and so forth. But we took that as a huge pressure on us that we had to try and be the same as everybody else. But instead of having other people's opinions projected onto our children, we needed to have an attitude change from the wider community. It wasn't that we needed to change at all. So really, where it lies is parents are diverse. Parents have various ways of raising their own children. My children have their own way of seeing the world compared to children who've had parents that could hear.
So the impact isn't necessarily about my deafness or about other disabilities. It's about the gains that we have, that both of my children's, well, all my children, both their parents are deaf, and that's a gain that they have. So, for example, learning Auslan and English, all of my children have got the advantage. Mm. So in that respect, it is definitely a gain. And I can definitely say that it's not necessarily a disability.
Totally agree. Yeah. Thank you for sharing your story.
Anyone? Thank you very much.
Thank you. And thanks again for having me and listening. I appreciate it.